From the KCPW Danker Studios at Library Square, this is Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. There are a lot of exciting developments in the world of astronomy this week. Last weekend, many people looked for the blood moon in the sky, and this week, an announcement from NASA that running water has been found on the surface of Mars. Joining me today will be Seth Jarvis, Executive Director of the Clark Planetarium, talking about the role of science in the lives of everyday Utahns, and also about some exciting changes at the Clark Planetarium. All of that after this news from the BBC. Welcome back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance, joined today by my friend, Seth Jarvis. Seth is the director, executive director of the Clark Planetarium in beautiful downtown Salt Lake City. Seth, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
A lot going on in the world of stars and skies and everything else that you focus on. Big news this week. Water on Mars. I know you've been able to talk to a lot of media about this, but this is really exciting.
NASA has been teasing this for quite a while, but the new news that they just barely released is that they have confirmed from multiple observations of orbiting spacecraft and some of the information from the Curiosity rover on Mars mm-hmm. that there is today, while we are talking, liquid running water on the surface of Mars.
Wow.
It seems to be seasonal. It's mostly water that you see running downslope through the rims of craters. But there's lots of little canyons and gullies and sort of washes that you see on Mars. And the thought had been, well, maybe there's some explanation where it's simply gravity pulling rocks and sand mm-hmm. down the slopes of hills. But the news that NASA just barely announced is that this is confirmed chemically to be the result of running water.
Wow.
It's a salty water on Mars. It's warm enough with the salts there that even though the temperature would be freezing to us, it would be about 10 below zero Fahrenheit, that salty water is nonetheless liquid and flows like creeks. You would recognize something that would resemble any of the canyon streams coming from the Wasatch
Front.
And more.
Wow.
There's evidence of major flooding on Mars. There's evidence of ancient oceans and freshwater lakes.
Wow.
There's still a lot of freshwater frozen in the Martian polar caps. There's a lot of freshwater frozen in a kind of permafrost a couple of feet down below the surface in many areas of Mars. So while the surface of Mars resembles Kane County.
Right.
while the surface of Mars looks like a rocky desert, and when you look at the movies like The Martian, you know, the Matt Damon movie, that terrain is looking pretty inhospitable. The fact is that if you dig a little bit, Mars has quite a lot of water, and now the news is it's not all just frozen. It's not just wisps in the atmosphere. It's actual liquid running water. You just have to know where to find it.
Wow. So what this means, the potential is for life, because water's sort of, our understanding, water's a precursor for life, right?
Water's necessary, and the chances that this water is sterile are really, really low.
Wow.
And so the idea then is, where there's water and where there's dirt, there's almost always some kind of life.
Yeah.
So will there be some kind of weird microbe, you know, these super hardy microbes that live, you know, what they call extremophiles, weird microbes that are very tough and resilient to low pressure and cosmic rays and that sort of thing. It's also significant because when people do go to Mars,
which is going to happen,
you know, people say, are there Martians? I say, yes, they're attending third grade right now.
Yeah.
So when the third graders grow up to become the genuine Martians, they got to get to Mars and find something to breathe and something to drink. And if you're going to grow crops on Martian soil, then you're going to need to be able to water those crops. And you do that by either extracting water from the atmosphere, or now we know that if you land in the right place, you could literally drill into it and get basically salt water.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
I love talking with you about this because you have such genuine... I mean, you know, anytime a guest comes on the show, they're always excited about whatever they're here to talk about, but you are just...
People should be excited about this.
It's
this
really
is the
cool.
future. This is the type of thing that really, more than anything else, shapes where, you know, if you're going to talk about what human beings are going to be like 100 years from now,
mm-hmm.
and you say, what were the things 100 years ago that would have been predictive mm-hmm. of those things? there's a lot of stuff that we do that nobody is going to notice or remember.
Sure.
And then there's things like, oh, we found out that you can actually live on Mars.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big deal.
That's pretty cool. A lot of excitement, even for novice astronomers, this weekend with the Blood Moon, this past weekend. I know
right.
a lot of people very excited about that. You had record-breaking crowds.
We had a crowd up on the library roof, more than could be handled. We had to have an overflow crowd. I'm here to tell you, amazingly, the world did not end.
It did not end. We're here today.
I know. This is like, what, the seventh or eighth one in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what made this special is that you occasionally have a combination of the moon in its elliptical orbit. Sometimes the moon is a little closer to Earth mm-hmm. than other times. The closest point of the moon in its orbit around the Earth, called its perigee, coincides with the full moon. That makes it a supermoon. And the moon mm-hmm. is about 14% bigger and about 30% brighter because it's about 20,000 miles closer. And then very rarely, you will have that super full moon occur during a total lunar eclipse.
Yeah.
And that's what happened Sunday night. So the last one visible like that was 1982. The next one won't be until 2033.
Wow.
Now there's plenty of lunar eclipses coming,
yeah.
but if you want a lunar eclipse during a supermoon, you're going to be October of 2033.
Well, I know my wife and son and his friend, we all went up and looked at it. It was really cool, and there were lots of people.
A gazillion
people were really excited about it.
Yeah.
It seems kind of magical in some ways.
Space is a very popular subject with the public,
mm-hmm.
and you look at the fiction movies, for
yeah.
example, The Martian, and you look at the public's interest in space missions when the Curiosity rover landed on Mars. It
mm-hmm.
broke the NASA websites. The news announcement about water on Mars, I could not log into the NASA TV website for love nor money.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the British newspaper, The Guardian, had a great account of it.
so
I was able to read a British newspaper about what NASA had just released.
Yeah.
So there's huge demand for news about space. I think it fires the imagination. It lights a flame. It makes the light bulbs go off in people's heads. It certainly inspires kids. They
yeah.
want to know about this stuff.
Well, it's the future, as you said. I mean,
yep.
that's really 100 years from now, 200 years from
it's
now, that's
future.
What we'll be exploring.
And it's a future that you can identify as hopeful.
Yeah.
It's something about
yeah.
which you can be pretty confident. It's kind of the Star Trek. I mean, the reason why Star Trek appeals to people is it says the future's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, in this future, we've solved the really nasty, icky problems, and now the mystery is to boldly go.
Yeah.
I mean, if exploration is what you're worried about,
we got a lot of places.
That means you've done well.
Yeah, we got a lot of places still to explore.
Yeah.
When we find the Klingons, then we'll have more problems. And not at the Salt Palace during Comic-Con.
No.
We'll find the real.
No,
well, maybe we'll find them on Mars. That's very exciting news.
What you're probably going to find on Mars are microbes.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, some kind of bacteria. The
yeah.
mystery will be, are they DNA-based?
Mm-hmm.
They will almost certainly be organic because
yeah.
we found simple carbon-based molecules, not life, but the essential building blocks of life have already been found on Mars. Now with this news that there's liquid running salty water
yeah.
on Mars, it sort of makes it really improbable that Mars is a completely sterile world.
Wow.
It probably has a lot of life on it, but it's maybe on the underside of a rock and you got to know where to find it.
Yeah. Wow. Very, very cool. Well, you are really the, if you don't mind me saying this, kind of the space ambassador to our community as the executive
okay.
director of the Clark Planetarium. I mean, really, that's what the Clark Planetarium exists for, is to take these exciting, dynamic, whether it's discoveries or just this vision of what the future might be, and bring that to a local level. This is where people go to learn about these things and get inspired about these things. And you've got a big plan of what you're going to do and how you're really transforming this facility.
Science is the most approachable, the friendliest science, and to do astronomy, all you mm-hmm. got to do is just look up. Anybody
yeah.
can do astronomy by just paying attention to where the moon or the sun sets every night.
Yeah.
Our mission is to get the public excited about the science in their everyday lives and to gain an appreciation for how you can sort of ground yourself by understanding the universe around you.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of naturalists when you think about it that way. The planetarium, as part of fulfilling its mission, is undergoing a major renovation of our exhibits program. We're in the process of a year-long modernization of all of our interior exhibits. We're just now finishing a kind of massive interior construction project where we've built a new deck interior, and we've added about 1,000 square feet for new exhibit space. But the other 10,000 square feet of existing exhibit space is undergoing a major overhaul. October is the month of sort of pardon our dust while we finish up some exhibits. Then we go into the holiday season where we keep things pretty much business as usual.
Yeah.
But then starting early next year, and especially as you get into the summer of 2016, it's going to be nuts at the planetarium. And you better come see the exhibits now, because by next summer you won't recognize the place.
Yeah, yeah. This is the time to go check them out. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about science, about astronomy, and about the role of both of these disciplines in the lives of the people of Utah, and in particular, in the lives of children with the Clark Planetarium. My guest today, Seth Jarvis, Executive Director of the Clark Planetarium. We will be back after these messages. We are back. You are listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. Joining me today, my friend, Seth Jarvis. Seth is the executive director of the Clark Planetarium. Before we left on break, we were talking a little bit about the changes to Clark Planetarium. And maybe you can just sort of give people a sense of what they can expect a year from now. When they walk through the doors, how will they be greeted? What will it feel like in ways that are different than it feels right now?
By the end of the summer 2016, we will have changed pretty much every square foot of exhibit space in the Clark Planetarium building. Our exhibits are free to the public, and we're open 7 days of the week. So part of our mandate is to be a public, easy access resource for inspiring people to appreciate the science in their everyday lives. Our exhibits are being redone with an idea that they need to be highly interactive. They need to be inquiry-based, so that when you walk up to the exhibit, you actually receive relatively little in the way of instruction, and it's more about you looking at it and going, oh, I think I pushed this thing here to make this happen. Why did that happen? And you play with it. I mean, really, the exhibits are there to be played with. The exhibits are meant to be shared. Our exhibits are designed so that more than one person at a time can experience it, and they can then play off of each other and talk about what they're doing. Parents and kids, grandparents and grandkids, friends, people out on dates, the whole idea is it's not an exhibit that you stand alone in front of and look at the artifact in the glass box and read the little text panel.
Right.
These are exhibits where you walk up to it, you get your hands on it, maybe you climb inside it, and it's kind of the term for it is kinesthetic. You're moving things around to appreciate, you know, the physicality. We're not a museum of anthropology where you don't dare touch the artifacts.
Right.
In our case, we want people to appreciate the physics of things. We want them to understand the relationship between physical things that help explain how the universe works. So when we want to tell you about rockets, you're going to launch a rocket.
Yeah.
When we want to tell you about the planets of the solar system, you're going to do everything from stand in front of a green screen and learn how to make a weather forecast as though you were the weather person on
the meteorologist. Yeah.
And I can't promise that this is going to happen, but we're researching it pretty hard. An exhibit that allows you to see what different planets smell like.
Wow.
Because some of them are going to have a distinctive smell and you may not like them.
Yeah.
And so one of the things for astronauts to recognize is that, let's take for an example, Mars, the airlock of Mars, where you're taking off your spacesuit after having been, you're going to go, Mars smells like rotten eggs.
Yeah, sulfur.
Probably lots pretty horribly.
Yeah.
And that may be something that you just have to get used to if you want to be a Martian.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah. For the exhibits, I mean, we want to have an alien landscape that you actually walk around inside of and experience sort of the sights and sounds of things. Kids can get their wiggles out by climbing a kind of a jungle gym shaped like a rocket, and parents can watch the kids run.
But it's interactive. They're inside
and playing
in this rocket.
Very interactive. You experiment with planets. You experiment with a kind of a black hole simulator. The only thing I can't do that I really would love to is weightlessness, but
someday.
There are some limits that have to just be accepted.
So you guys opened, what, 10?
12 years ago.
So maybe.
So it's time.
12 years from now, maybe you can get weightlessness in there.
I'll look into that.
See what you can do. And I don't know that everybody is aware of this, free, completely free for the exhibits, but then you do have the IMAX theater and star shows, and there is a little charge for those.
We have a dome theater, an all-digital projection. It's called a an all-sky visual theater, and then we also have an IMAX theater. The IMAX theater shows science and nature nonfiction documentaries, and so you can learn about ocean life and mountains. And this coming February, we're helping open a brand new movie about America's national parks, which is going to be awesome.
Very cool. Yeah.
We're doing a lot with the national parks lately as the parks become the refuge where people go to look at the night sky and the concept of astrotourism.
There is such a tie there. I've gone down to Goblin Valley and looked up at the sky, and it's as spectacular as the rocks.
So I was just down at Canyonlands last weekend helping them celebrate being designated as a premier dark sky park. The National Park Service now has a program where they're promoting, and this is their tagline, half the park is after dark.
Yeah.
Park rangers now have telescopes, and there are park rangers that are receiving training from people like the Planetarium and others, where we're training park rangers to be night sky interpreters for the visiting
really
public.
Really guides.
And a lot of people go to the parks for the purpose of seeing the night sky, because that's where you can still see the Milky Way.
Yeah.
Point is, lots happening between planetariums and the National Park Service. They're being terrific. And as we celebrate next year the 100th anniversary of the U.S. National Park System, Clark Planetarium is really proud to be part of that celebration and reminding people that, indeed, half the park is after dark, and astrotourism is a growing reason for visiting America's national parks.
It truly is spectacular. One of the most magical moments of my life was getting out of a tent with my wife and son and our dog and spending half an hour, you know,
looking. It blows the mind.
You get out to the tent to pee, but really, once you're out, the show is spectacular.
Everybody has that experience.
Yeah,
your eyes
so
are fully dark adapted. The sky above you is unlike anything else.
Yeah.
What people don't realize is that Utah is really overrepresented where national parks are concerned.
Yeah.
We have five national parks, and all of them have terrific night skies for people to appreciate. So while there's lots of national parks in places where it doesn't matter, you're still going to be too close to the lights of, you know, some East Coast city.
Right.
Here in Utah, we've got dark sky national parks that are world famous for the quality of their astronomy views.
I wanted to talk about the star shows because you guys are really international leaders in terms of creating star shows, right?
Right. It's a tradition that we began back when we were called Hansen Planetarium, and we decided when we moved to become Clark Planetarium in 2003 that even though it was a completely new technology, we were going to master that technology and start making star shows in the all computer graphics realm. And as the years have gone by, we just have been doing that. Our star shows sell literally around the world. And so when you are visiting a planetarium in Germany or Australia or Greece, let alone West Virginia, odds are good that you'll find a Clark Planetarium show on their schedule. Salt Lake City is kind of the Hollywood of planetarium shows. A lot of the shows that planetarium show around the world come from either Evans and Sutherland up by the U or Clark Planetarium here downtown. That's a good model that works for us because when we make these shows, we sell them. That's a significant source of revenue to the planetarium because we're largely self-funded through our earned income activities. And we have to rely on a lot of our earned income to keep the doors open. The reason the shows are good when you visit Clark Planetarium in Salt Lake City is because we're making shows that are going to end up in Sydney, Australia.
So an ambassador and a Hollywood mogul for the star show community.
I've never heard that.
For Seth Jarvis. I wanted to spend just a second. You and I are Facebook friends, and I appreciate so much of what you put on Facebook. I know you have a really strong personal commitment to science and the role of science in helping to think about the values that we have as a society, the role of science in helping our society grow and make good decisions. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you see the Clark Planetarium in relationship to that. I mean, what is the role of science? What is the role of the Clark Planetarium in helping our community make good decisions for the long haul?
The thing that I'm most passionately committed to is a concept known as science literacy. You would never think that a person could be a good citizen if they didn't know how to read. And you would never even think that a person was an especially good citizen if they said, I can't even add numbers. I don't know how to do that. And yet, it is somehow socially acceptable to declare yourself ignorant of science. And unfortunately, a lot of people think it's okay on an important science topic to say, well, I'm not a scientist. And then use that as some kind of an excuse for saying things that on examination aren't really true and kind of problematic. Climate change. Okay? So if you're going to have a functional society, it's important that the people who are making decisions as a group after vigorous and robust and far-reaching debate, that is a debate that is being debated by people who know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And you would never have a conversation about how to operate a school by people who had never been to school and were themselves completely illiterate.
Right.
And yet look at all of the critical policy discussions that are in front of the nation right now that have at some level a very important scientific concept, whether it's medical ethics or environment or space policy for that matter.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a meaningful conversation about those things and really flesh out all sides of the argument, the people engaged in that have got to be scientifically literate. You have to be discussing ideas on the merits. What is the objective evidence? What does the research show? And so for science literacy, that's what drives me personally. Science literacy has always mattered, but when has it ever mattered more than today?
And the future, it's just going to matter more and more
exactly.
and more as we understand more about our universe.
We are surrounded by the science, you know, and we're standing here, and, you know, and cell phones are everywhere and your banking transactions, but quite literally, none of those technologies would work without Einsteinian general relativity mm-hmm. that is celebrating its 100th anniversary later this year.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that you actually have to have relativity to make international billion-dollar wire transfers work and synchronize up, and that the cell phone network and the GPS systems don't work if you're calculating the universe according to the rules of Sir Isaac Newton. You actually have to employ Einsteinian relativity. So when people say, who cares, why does it matter that someone has found another test for whether or not Einstein knew what he was talking about, I would say take the cell phone out of your pocket right now and throw it in the trash, because without that, it doesn't work. That's why you should care.
Awesome. Seth, thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. Seth Jarvis, Executive Director of the Clark Planetarium. The Clark Planetarium is located at the Gateway in beautiful downtown Salt Lake City. If you have not been there, please go check it out. It is amazing, and it's only going to get better.
That's right. Thank you.